Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Makos Daf Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Maseches Makis opens up with the topic of Edim Zomimim. Loosely translated, witnesses that are liars. However, the concept of Edim Zomimim is a limited concept, not including all forms of lying while giving testimony, but very specifically, this involves a situation where two witnesses come and say testimony, and two other witnesses come in afterwards and say, how can you testify about that event that you just testified about when you were with us at a different place at the time that you claim to have witnessed the event you testified about? So it's a function of challenging their capability of testifying, not based on the information itself, but on their ability to testify by virtue of the fact that the second witnesses are claiming a difference in terms of place at the very time they claimed the event took place. The Gemara Shas Ozer that you see on your screen has as one of its features topic headings and structural notes that one finds in the margin. In this case, our Nosei, the topic heading, says HaMishnah Malamedes Shnei Mikrim Shebohem Ein Oisin Din Hazoma. The Mishnah will be teaching us two situations where we do not carry out the official punishment involving or due to witnesses that are found to be Edim Zomimim, which is known as the Shel Kasher Zomam, which means, in general, witnesses that are found to be lying through the method of Hazoma, we give to them, we punish them with what they intended to punish the defendant. So if the original witnesses were testifying that the defendant committed a murder, they are instead put to death. Our Mishnah will be teaching us two examples of testimony that we do not carry out the din of Kasher Zomam, Elo Loikin Arboim, as you can see we've written on the side, but rather they will get lashes, the penalty of Malkus. As we open up the Mishnah attempts to describe how we carry out the din of Edim Zomimim, but as you read on in the Mishnah then tells us what we just learned is not the formal din of Edim Zomimim. There seems to be a somewhat incongruous setup between the opening of the Mishnah and the continuation of the Mishnah. The Gemara itself will address this question in the very beginning section. So, without any further ado, let us start the Mishnah. Ketzad ho'edim na'asim zomimim. How is it that edim are found to be zomimim? Example 1, and before we go on, we'll just remind ourselves that what we're going to be learning now is, as the Mishnah itself says, is not the standard approach to Zomimim. So the Mishnah says, Me'idim anu be'ish ploni, shehu ben grusho ben chalutza. We are testifying about so-and-so, who is a Kohen, that he is the son of a woman who is either divorced or received chalitza. In other words, they are testifying that in front of us, the mother of this man that the community thinks is a standard Kohen, his mother received a divorce before he was born. And as a result of that, a Kohen who marries a divorced woman and bears a child, the child is called a cholol, and he does not have the dinim, the halochas, that apply to kahuna. The Mishnah says, Ein Omrim. Notice we have a double underline. Under our Mivneh heading, we featured in the outside margin and noted that this expression, Ein Omrim, is going to be featured. You'll see it featured here and in the second example. Ein Omrim, Yasa Ze Ben Grusho Ben Chalutza Tavtov. If these witnesses themselves were, let us say, they were Kohanim, and they were found to be Zoymimim, we do not say that this original set of witnesses are themselves turned into being a cholol, being called a ben grusho ben chalutza. Elo loike arboim. Rather, the witnesses that are found to be zimimim, they receive 40 lashes, 39 malchus. Me'idim anu, a second example, and you can see we've numbered it with Roman numeral number 2. Me'idim anu be'ish ploni shuhu chayav liglos. We testify about so-and-so that he is to be exiled, which means he is to be, as a result of committing a murder inadvertently, rotzech b'shogeg, he has to go to one of the Orei Miklot, one of the cities of refuge. The cities of refuge, of course, is a parsha in the Torah, where the Torah describes one who inadvertently killed somebody is to go to one of these cities of refuge and stay there for the rest of the life of the current Kohen Gadol. Upon the death of the current Kohen Gadol, that murderer is then able to return home. So the witnesses are testifying about so-and-so, that he committed a murder inadvertently, and as a result of that, he must go to one of the cities of refuge. And then the witnesses are found to be Zomimim. What do we do with them? Ein omrim yigle ze tachtov. We don't say that the witnesses are to be exiled in the place of the defendant. Elo loike arboim. Rather, the witnesses will get the lashes, the Torah ordained lashes. They're known as malchus arboim. Technically speaking, though, 39 lashes. Another detail concerning Eidim Zomimim, which will come up in a later sugya, but the halacha says that witnesses that are found to be Zomimim get the punishment that they wanted to see to it that the defendant would get. When they are shown to be liars, they get that punishment. This is, however, it's qualified so long as the defendant himself did not already receive the punishment. If the defendant himself, though, already received the punishment, let us go back to the case of the example of the murder. If, let us say, the two original witnesses testified that so-and-so committed a murder, and the defendant was subsequently executed based on their testimony, and then after that, two more witnesses come in and say, hey, how could you have testified about the murder when you were with us at the time you claim the murder have taken place in a different location? In such a case, the Eidim Zomimim will not themselves be murdered. Turning to the Gemara now, as we mentioned in our introductory remarks, the Gemara will be addressing the seeming incongruity of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah opens up by leading us to believe that it will describe how Edom becomes Zomimim, and then the examples the Mishnah presents are Dafka examples where we don't treat them with the classic penalty of Kasher Zomam, of the penalty due to standard Edim Zomimim. Before we read the Gemara itself, notice in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, there is an encircled kuf. This indicates a kushya, a question, and you find a vertical dash line that follows the kuf, indicating that the lines opposite this vertical dashed line are all part of the question. There are two points to the question. Number one, ha, ketzad ein ho'edim na'asin zomemim miboya lei. The more appropriate reading of the Mishnah would have been, how is it that, give an example where we do not treat the Edim with the standard halacha that we do Edim Zomimim in general, namely that we do not fulfill in them the concept of Kasher Zomam, give to them what they schemed to give to the defendant. V'oid dekotoni lekamon. Furthermore, later in the Perek, there is a Mishnah that describes how Edim become Edim Zomimim. In other words, we don't really need this Mishnah to deal with that, as follows. And in our marking system, you can see that which is framed is a Tanaic source. And the Mishnah later on says, Avol Omru Lohem, Heich Atem Edim. A second set of witnesses turns to a first set and says, how can you testify what you are saying? Sheharei ba'oisa hayoim atem hoisem imonu b'mokom ploni. For the very day that you are claiming the event took place, you were with us in a different location. Harei elu zomimim. That is how you establish Edim to be Edim zomimim. So we see that the issue is dealt with by a subsequent Mishnah. The question then is, what is our Mishnah trying to accomplish? The Gemara answers, Tana Hosam Koi. Our Mishnah is really using as a jump-off point the Mishnah in Maseches Sanhedrin that one will find in a Gemara, Daf Pei Tes Omed Aleph. What we've done in the marking of this particular section of Gemara, you can see a dashed frame around the next few lines. Theoretically, we could have used a standard frame because that which is included in this section is of Tanaic nature. However, the reason we use the dashed frame is because really this is a compilation of Mishnayos from Maseches Sanhedrin and including our Mishnah. We've also included in this framed section numbering. You'll see 1, 2, and 3. We have a little review point or summary of what we're going to see written on the side of our Shas Ozer, the inside margin. You'll notice a note that says Gimel Dargois, three levels, Be'anisha Be'edim Zomimim, with regard to the punishment of Edim Zomimim. Number one, Kashir Zomam. That's the standard approach. Edim get what they were trying to give to the defendant, what they were trying to see the defendant punished with. They get that. Number two, Zomime Bas Kohen, the example we saw in our Mishnah, those that were lying about a let us be more accurate. This is really a new example, not something we saw in the Mishnah. But the second case that's featured is a situation where two witnesses testify about a married woman who happens to be the daughter of a kohen that was engaged in immorality. She was an eishes ish, having relations with another man. The Torah says that the Bas Kohen, who behaves immorally, is subject to the penalty of Srefa, and the Boel, the outside man, the paramour, he gets Chenek. Let us say two witnesses come and testify concerning the Bas Kohen and her affair, and they are found to be themselves Zomimim. In other words, the event didn't take place. They were lying. They couldn't have testified about it because they were in another place at the time they claimed the affair took place. What penalty do they get? So we're going to see that they do not get they do not get that which they were trying to give her. In other words, they were trying to see to it that she would get sreifa, which is the penalty of a bas kohen shizinsa, but rather they get the penalty that they try to impose on the paramour, namely chenek. There's a third category of dealing with the Edom Zomimim, and that is what's represented by our Mishnah. They get Malkus Arboim. Those examples are Ben Grusha or Golus. So what we've done here is strung together 3 points found in Mishnayos, and with that we'll also understand where our Mishnah is coming from. So let's now read this inside. After having read the Gemara's response, Tana Hasam Koi, the Tana, our Tana here, the beginning of Makkos, is jumping off from the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which says, Kol hazomimim magdimim lo'isamisa. All witnesses that are found to be Edom Zomimim, namely a second set of witnesses comes and testifies that the first set could not have said what they did because they were in a different place at the time they said the event took place. So, well, those Edom Zomimim get the penalty they were trying to condemn the original defendant with. A second example, Chutz Mizomimei Bas Koyin Uboyalo, with the exception of the witnesses that are found to be Zomimim, who testified about the adulterous affair of a Bas Koyin and her paramour, where we say they do not get what they were trying to give the Bas Koyin, namely Sreifa, but rather they get the penalty, they get punished with that which they were trying to impose on the paramour, the Chenek. She'ein magdimen lo'oiso misa, elo lo'misa cheres. They don't get the misa, the death penalty they were trying to give to her, but rather they get a different death penalty, namely the one they were trying to impose on him. Number 3, and this is where our Mishnah comes in. V'yesh edim zomim acherim she'ein oisin bohem din hazoma kol ikar. There's another example of edim zomimim that do not receive the punishment of din hazoma, of standard edim zomimim whatsoever. Elo malchus abarim. Rather, they get the lashes. Ketzad. How is that to be? And you can see here, this is where our Mishnah is the language here is taken from our Mishnah. Me'idim onu be'ish plonishu ben grusha ben chalutza. We testify about so-and-so that his mother was divorced and his mother had married a kohen or ben chalutza, or his mother had received chalitza, making this person they're testifying about a cholol, a non-kohen. Ein omrim yase ze ben grusha ben chalutza taftav. We do not say that the witnesses are to become labeled as a ben grusha or ben chalutza. Elo loike esar boim. Rather, they get lashes. Minohani mili. Now the Gemara turns to a new question. From where do we know that we don't treat these edim that happen to be kohanim? From where do we know that we do not turn them into chalolim, but rather we give them malchus? So the question, to be precise here, the question is, how do we know that we do not turn them into chalolim? On the side of our Gemara, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading. Sometimes in our Shas Ozer, we combine the topic with the structural note. Here you'll see a trapezoid, what we sometimes term a volcano marking. All geometric forms in the marking system serve the same purpose, and that is to connect related names or ideas. We often refer to it as a series marking. In this case, the volcano form are Shnei Tshuvos Vashelo, two responses to the question, Minayin Shlodonim Edim Zomimim Kehanim, from where do we know that we do not punish the false witnesses that happen to be themselves Kehanim, the Ben Gurusha, witnesses concerning the case of Ben Gurusha, Kehalolim, we don't treat them as Halolim. Before we go too much further in the Gemara, the question here is focusing on how do we know in the case of those that testified falsely about the Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza case. Don't forget, in our Mishnah, there was another example, the case of Golos. The Gemara on Amud Beis will deal with the issue of Galus in the same fashion. How do we know that we don't send the witnesses that were found to be Zomimim into Galus? Structurally, we're going to be using a similar marking with regard to the responses. Just like over here, we have two volcano forms, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Bar Pada, who will be answering the question of from where do we know, the Menohan Emili question. So too, if you scroll ahead to Beis Amud Beis, or if you have already ordered your volume of the Shas Ozer and are in possession of it, you'll notice the top part of Beis Amud Beis, two more volcano markings, two more responses to the question of Menohan Emili regarding the second example of the Mishnah. How do we know that we don't send these false witnesses into Golos, but rather they get Malkus? So, in our sugya at hand, how do we know that we don't label or convert these Kohanim that happen to be witnesses that were that falsely testified about Ben Grusho, Ben Chalutza, how do we know that we don't convert them into Chalola? Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, the Omar Kro, there's a posuk that says, in the case of Edim Zomamim, it says, V'asisem loy kasher zomam. We do to them, we punish them like they schemed. Loy v'loy lezaro. The punishment is such that it can affect only the witnesses themselves and cannot punish along with the witnesses' offspring, the children of these false witnesses. Now, if we would declare them halolim, the nature of a cholol is that not only is he a cholol, but his children and his grandchildren, atzof kolodoros, are halolim. So if we were to convert them into halolim, if we would proclaim that these kohanim are now no longer, they are non-kohanim, they're halolim, we're basically punishing their children as well. And the pasuk says that when you come to punish the Edim Zomamim, the punishment is inflicted on the witnesses themselves and shall not affect future generations. The Gemara asks, V'liv saluhu ledidei, v'lo liv salu lezarei. So why not simply declare that these witnesses themselves are halolim, but their children will be kosher kohanim? The Gemara says that is not tenable, because bo'inon kasher zomam la'asis v'leka, the penalty that we are to give the witnesses, if you follow the scheme of kasher zomam, you give them what they wanted to do to the defendant. Now, what did they want to do to the defendant? They wanted to declare him a cholol, and that declaration would have, yes, affected his offspring as well. So by saying that the witnesses themselves become halolim and not their offspring, I'm not fulfilling whatsoever the intent of the Torah, which is they get what they intended to give to the defendant. Bar Pada Omer, Kal v'chomer. Bar Pada approaches his answer without resorting to a pasuk, namely, not like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who cited the pasuk v'asisem loy kasher zomam, but Bar Pada says, the way I know that we do not make them into halolim is through kal v'chomer logic. Let's see how that works. Uma hamechalel eino mischalel. In an unrelated case, a kohen, a regular kohen, that married a divorced woman. He is mechalel his offspring. By having married this woman, the children he produces are called halolim. They will not be entitled to receive truma. They do not do avodas beis hamikdash. He is called the mechalel. He did something actively. He married a divorced woman and produced children with her. And even so, even though he is able to render his offspring as invalid kohanim, eino mischalel, he himself is not rendered invalid midoraisa. He remains a kohen. He remains a full-fledged kohen midoraisa. So mind you, someone who is effective in ruining others, he himself is not ruined. Habo lechalel velochilel, the Edim Zomamim that intended, they came with an intention to render unfit, but were not successful because we found them, we caught them. we caught them in the act. What does it mean? Meaning, a second set of witnesses came and showed that they were false. So, mind you, these guys who were not, they attempted, but were unsuccessful, Einodin Shelo Yishalo, then certainly they themselves shall not turn into Chalolim. Let's go over that point once again. Someone, the father, the one who married a Kohen, who married a Grusha, someone who was effective in ruining his offspring remains unaffected. Someone who attempted to ruin and was unsuccessful certainly shall remain unaffected. Maskif lo Ravina. Ravina attacks Bar Pardo's response, and he says, Im Kain Bitalta Teras Edim Zomanim. Before we go further, let's just take note of another one of our markings. We have another long question. This maskif is an attack, and it continues till the second line from the top of Amud Beis. Ravina attacks Bar Pardo and says, if you are going to accept this Kal V'Chomer logic, then at the end of the day, you're not going to ever fulfill the Torah's expectation of how one is to deal with the Edim Zomamim. Let's now demonstrate. Uma ha-soikel, eino niskal. This is a reference to, soikel means to stone. But we have to be more specific here. Witnesses that were not found to be false until the defendant was actually killed. In other words, we have witnesses that were effective in their testimony. They're called the sokel. Uma ha-sokel, eino niskal. We said before in our introductory remarks that if you have witnesses that are successful in their testimony, meaning after, as a result of their testimony, the defendant is punished. And afterwards, and subsequent to that, after the defendant is executed, the witnesses, are found to be false, nothing happens to them. Meaning we don't execute them. That's what's being described over here. Uma ha-soikel, eino niskal. Witnesses that were effective themselves do not get punished. Habol liskol velo sokal. Witnesses that came with an intent to condemn the murderer but were caught beforehand, before the execution took place, and were shown to be zomimim. So they who came, who were shown to be zomimim, who came to see to an execution and were not effective, Einodin shelo yisokel, then all the more so they shall not be executed. And if you say that, that's simply not true, because we know that they are executed based on the halacha of kasher zomam, that the witnesses that are found to be zomimim before the defendant is executed do in fact, yes, receive execution, are stoned themselves. So with this, Ravina rejects or shows Bar Pardo's logic to be inaccurate. Bar Pardo was trying to base himself on a form of logic where, mind you, if someone who is effective himself doesn't get punished, someone who attempts and is ineffective certainly should remain unpunished. As we said, if you follow that type of logic all the way through, it's going to come out to, in the case of the witnesses, that witnesses who attempted to condemn a defendant and were not effective, then certainly should not be punished with what they were trying to do. And yet we know that they are punished. Therefore, the Gemara says, "Elo machvarta kedishaninon meikara." Therefore, machvarta means more likely and more clear. It's clearer to rather kedishaninon, as we answered at the beginning, namely like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Mi'idamonu biishploni shuchayav golus v'chulei. The Mishnah said that witnesses who had testified about someone committing a murder inadvertently and then are found to be lying witnesses through Hazama, those witnesses are not sent to Golos. So, from where do we know that we do not say that the witnesses should go into exile to a city of refuge instead of the defendant? Amar Reish Lakish, Amar Kra. Here, Reish Lakish gives the opening answer. Interestingly, just like on Omer Aleph, the opening answer is from a Pasuk. The Pasuk says, in the case of a Rotzech B'shogeg, Hu Yonus El Achas He'orim. He is to run to one of the cities of refuge. Hu V'lo Zomimim. And the oral law, the Gemara, through Reish Lakish, tells us that you emphasize the word Hu in the Pasuk, as we've done with our dashed underline, to be a limiting expression, namely he, and not the zomim, to the exclusion of witnesses that are found to be liars. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Kal Vachomer. Rabbi Yochanan says, I will apply Kal Vachomer logic and come out to the same conclusion, that the zomimim shall not go into Golos. Let's see how his logic works. Umahu sha'asa ma'aseh b'mezid eino goyla. Mind you, a murderer, a premeditated murderer, who did his ma'aseh b'mezid, he did it with intent, does not go to a city of refuge. Hein shelo asu ma'aseh b'mezid, they, the witnesses, they didn't do an action, they simply spoke. They are less severe. They who didn't do an action with intent, they did speech with intent, but not an action with intent, enodin shelo yiglu, that all the more so they should not go to a city of refuge. The Gemara at this point rejects what Rabbi Yochanan just said, and we've indicated this visually with a long marking, a dalet that you see encircled is a dechia, a rejection, with a vertical dashed line following the dal, indicating the length of this rejection comment. The Gemara says, "Vehi no senes." The point that you are bringing to exempt the witnesses is, in fact, the very point that is the reason to bind them or mechayev them in Golos. Who sha'asa ma'aseh b'mezid lo ligli, the murderer who murdered in a premeditated fashion, he does not go into exile, ki hechi de lo teve le kapora, so that he is not afforded penitence, kapora, absolution from sin. Hain, these witnesses, shelo asu ma'aseh b'mezid, the witnesses who didn't do an action in a premeditated fashion, they are less severe in that sense. Nami liglu, they should go into Golos. Ki hechi de lehevi lehu kapora, so that they are afforded penitence. So, if you're going to use the analogy to the rotzeach b'mezid, you're going to actually come out with a swara, with a piece of reasoning that would suggest that maybe they should go into Golos. So if you're going to follow Rabbi Yochanan, you're going to come out to a point of law opposite to what we were taught in the Mishnah. Ela machvarto k'dereish lakish. Rather, it is more likely, as Reish Lakish explained, based on the pasuk, Hu Yonus Velo Zomimim. As you can see in our markings, we have a slash in the Gemara. This is to designate that the Gemara that follows is of a new nature, namely, it does not follow from that which was mentioned up till now. Before we read the Gemara itself, let us glance at the topic heading, the Nosei. Hamokor the shayach oynish malkus leidim zomimim b'mikre she'efshu l'kayim bohem kasher zomam. We're now going to be seeking a source that would suggest, that would hint to the idea that edim zomimim shall get malkus in the event that I cannot carry out the kasher zomam approach. The kasher zomam approach states that they should get what they were trying to give to the defendant. Oma Ula, Remez li Edim Zomimim, skipping the bracketed section of three lines, Sheloikin Minatora Minayin, Let's read that again with the skip. Amar Ula remez li Adim Zomimim sheloikin mina Torah minayim. From the Torah, where do we have an allusion that the Adim Zomimim could get malchus, could get lashings? We have brackets inserted into our marked Gemaras in order to assist in the in order to preserve the flow of the reading in a logical form. You'll notice we have a star in the Gemara text where the brackets begin that connects you to a note in the margin where you'll find a star, and we've written in Soigrayim L'shem Dilog. These are brackets for the purpose of skipping. Ma shebesochem, that which is inside the brackets, have a loshen deboi tikun. It has a text that requires fixing, requires straightening out. And now, what we do is we'll read the Gemara again with the bracketed section, being that we are already familiar with what the Gemara is attempting to do afterwards. So, reading the Gemara again, Omar Ulo remez li'edim zomimin min ha-Torah minayin. Translated, it comes out that Ula is asking, from where is the, where do we see an allusion, a hint to the phenomenon of Adim Zomimim and their punishment in the Torah? So if you're going to understand Ula like that, the Gemara reacts with wonderment, with a tmiha. Remez the Adim Zomimim. You're looking for an allusion to some kind of hint to Adim Zomimim? V'haksiv. There's a Beferish a pasuk that says Va'asisem lo ikasher zomam. You do to the witnesses what they scheme to do to the defendant. So there's no need to seek out some type of remez, some type of allusion to something that seems to be rather obscure when it's a straight out pasuk. So what is Ula asking about? Ela remez li edim zomimim sheloikin min haTorah minayin. Where is there an allusion, a hint in the Torah to the possibility of Adim Zomimim receiving Malchus where you're in a case that I cannot give them the Kasher Zomam punishment? As the examples we saw in the case of Ben Grusha or Ede Golus. So the Gemara answers. We must note, of course, that we have another marking here. We have a long teretz marking. That means that all of the lines opposite this dashed vertical line form the answer. As we go on in the Gemara, the answer is not straightforth. It will require, as we said, going through all of the lines of the Gemara, and in addition to that, we're going to recommend learning the Rashi on this section as well, inside, which we will attempt to do. So the Gemara answers, the question being, from where do I know that Adim Zomim could receive Malchus when I cannot give them the Kasher Zomam penalty? Dichtiv, v'hitztiku es hatzadik, v'hirshiu es horosha, v'hoyo im bin hakois horosha. The pasuk is found in Devarim, Perek Chof Hei, Pasuk Aleph. We've written the Psukim on the side. In addition to Pasuk Aleph, we'll also see Pasuk Beis. Let us glance at that which we've written on the side. Ki Yeh Riv Bein Anoshim, the Pasuk says. When there's a squabble between two people, controversy, V'nivshu El HaMishpat, V'shoftum, and they come to be judged, and they're judged. V'hitztiku es hatzadik, v'hirshu es harasha, and they exonerate the innocent and condemn the guilty. V'hoya im bin hakois harasha, and in the event that he is chayav malchus, v'hipilu hashofet v'kol lefonav kidei rishaso b'mispar, and the judge sees to it that he gets lashed according to the number of lashings. Well, when you look at this pasuk, you see someone is exonerated, you see someone is found guilty, and you see lashings. So the Gemara asks in wonderment, Mishum v'hitztiku es hatzadik v'hirshiu es harasha, v'hoya im bin hakois harasha. Is it because someone was exonerated and someone found guilty that automatically leads to malchus? That's not necessarily the case. There are many cases of people found innocent and someone else found guilty, and it doesn't result in malchus. Rashi will elaborate on this question quite a bit more, but let's just read a few more lines in the Gemara. Ella, rather, the understanding of the pasuk is not referring to, when the pasuk says v'hitziku es hatzadik, it's not a reference to the judges, but rather Edim shehirshiu es hatzadik. There were original witnesses that condemned someone that was innocent. In other words, with their false testimony, they were trying to marshia. They were trying to find guilty the defendant who really is innocent. V'yasu edim achrini v'hitztiku es hatzadik d'me'ikora. And a second set of witnesses came in that showed through their testimony that the first set of witnesses were false, and thereby exonerating the original defendant who was truly innocent from the very beginning. And that's what the expression of v'hitztiku es hatzadik means. They exonerated the tzadik, the one who originally was in fact innocent. V'shavinu lahani rishoyim. And they, the second witnesses, made the first witnesses rishoyim. That's what the expression of v'hirshu es harosha means. The second set of witnesses were marshia. They can serve to condemn the wicked, the first set of witnesses who were scheming. And as a result, v'hoyo im bin ha-kois ha-rosha, and if it's impossible to carry out the penalty of kasher zomam, like we saw in the sugyon omer aleph, then v'hoyo im bin ha-kois ha-rosha, you give malchus to the wicked, to the false witnesses. That is the answer to Ula's question. Ula's question was, where is there an allusion in the Torah that Edim Zomamim could be subject to lashes? Just as we saw by showing that the Pasuk of Hitztiku as Hatzadik was referring to the second set of witnesses, condemning the first set of witnesses and exonerating the original defendant. As we mentioned earlier, it's worth looking at the Rashi to appreciate the fine points of the question, so let us do that. Because we exonerated the innocent, there's going to be lashes. If the expressions of hitzdiku and hirshu equals bidayonim komar is going on the judges themselves, v'tzadik v'rosha equals b'balei dinim, and the term tzadik in Russia is referring to the defendants, Loma li v'hitzdiku tzadik. What do I need that expression for? Lichtov. The pasuk could have written thusly: Ki yeh riv bein anashim v'nigshu el hamishpat v'shoftum v'hoyo im bin hakois. Loma huzkuru kan tzidka tzadik. Why is it necessary to insert this additional expression of the exoneration of the innocent? Is it so that wherever the judges find innocent, he who is innocent, and find guilty, the one who is guilty, yesh malchus, there is necessarily lashing? That the Torah comes along here and makes the malchus dependent on the innocence and the guilt. That's not true. There are many cases of judges ruling on the innocence of defendants and guilt of the guilty defendant, the guilty party. And malchus is not the result. Therefore, we're forced into saying that the pasuk is featuring the witnesses and not the judges. Edim shkorim, false witnesses, shehir shiu tzadik, that came to condemn an innocent man, the defendant. Ubo achirim v'hizimum v'tzdiku es hanidon, shehu tzadik. And a second set of witnesses came and demonstrated the falseness of the first set of witnesses and exonerated thereby the original defendant. And the second set of witnesses condemned the first set of witnesses and demonstrated they are wicked. which is now understood to mean im hazoma zu bas malchus, if the hazoma, if this false testimony is worthy of lashing, why would it be worthy of lashing? She'enu yochol lekayim bo din hazoma gemura, because we could not fulfill the complete din of hazoma kagon, as is the case be'eni ben grusha o golos, where I cannot fulfill the original din of hazoma, which means you give them what they wanted to give to the defendant. Well, the result then is v'hipilu ha'shofet v'ko, the judges then see to it that lashing is given. Turning back to the Gemara, why not say that the source for Malkus is another pasuk that says v'tepukle milo sane. The pasuk says in the Aseres Hadibros, in the Ten Commandments, lo sane b'reach ha'id shoker. And as a lav, as a negative command, negative commands, violation of them results in malchus. The Gemara answers, the reason that we did not cite lo sana as a source for the malchus is mishum dehave lav shein bo maisa. The nature of that negative violation is through a non-action, it's through speech. V'chol lav shein bo maisa lo kino lav. Negative commandments that their violation does not involve action do not result in malchus. Therefore, the saying over of testimony, being that it does not constitute an action, would not result in malchus. It's not, let us say, like someone who consumes pork. The Torah forbids the consumption of behemos tomeos. If someone does that, he is in violation of the negative command through the commission of an action, the action of eating. That's the kind of offense that results in malchus. Before we continue the Gemara, let us glance at our topic heading, the Nosei. In our Nosei, we have written, Dalid Dugmaos, four examples, Shel Edim Zomimim, Shel Mekaimin Bohem Kashir Zomam, where we do not fulfill in them, when they are found to be false, the standard kasher zomam punishment. Tanu Rabbanan, arba dvarim nemru be'edim zomamim. Number one, ein nas. There are four points stated in the context of false witnesses. Ein nas in ben grusha uben chalutza. Number two, v'ein goylin l'ori miklot. These first two examples are familiar to us. Number three, v'ein mishalman es ha-koifer. Let us glance at Rashi. V'ein mishalman koifer. Im he'idu b'shor ha-muad shahor ages ha-odam. If you have two witnesses that testified concerning we'll call it shor ha-muad, is an animal, it's an untamed ox. In other words, it's an animal that's demonstrated its goring capacity three times already. And this shor ha-muad, we'll call him the untamed ox, killed a person, the huzmu. And the witnesses that testified that the shor ha-muad killed a person were then found to be false through hazoma. V'hoyu mechayven es habaylim koifer. Their intent was that the owner of the ox should make a payment to the killed individual, to the family of the dead man, and the payment is called kofer, a kofer payment. Dichtiv im kofer yushas olov. That's what the pasuk says regarding a real case of a shor hamuad that killed somebody. So in our Tanaic source, we have a case of witnesses that were found to be zomimim. They testified falsely that someone's shor hamuad had killed somebody. They were trying to make the owner pay a kofer payment, a financial restitution to the family of the deceased, which is, that restitution is known as kofer. This source says they do not pay that, even though they were trying to condemn the owner to pay that. Number four, v'ein nimkorim be'evit ivri. If they testified that so and so was to be sold as an evit ivri, they, when found to be false, are themselves not sold as evit ivri. We have a fifth example. We've included that in our numberings, but pointed out, but numbered it in parentheses, because the opening of the source said 4 points. This is a fifth point. It's another opinion. Mishum Rabbi Kiva Omru. In the name of Rabbi Kiva, there is a fifth point added. Af ein mishalman al pi atzman. They will not pay if they confess as to their having testified falsely. These points, those points that are necessary to explain, will be explained in the course of the Gemara. And as we read on in the Gemara, after having completed the Tanaic source that you see was framed, the Gemara in our Shas Ozer provides numberings, and the numbering here corresponds to the points seen in the source. Number one, Ein Nasin Ben Grusho Ben Chusu. We say that the Edim Zomimim are themselves not converted into becoming Chalolim. They're not converted into becoming labeled as Ben Grusho Ben Chusu. So Kid Da Amoran, as we have already learned on Omid Aleph. Number two, Ve'en Goylin Li'orei Miklot. That they are not to go. Though they try to condemn the defendant into exile to a refuge city, they themselves, when found to be false, are not exiled. That too, Kedamoran, as we have already explained, we saw the source for that on the upper part of this omit. Number three, V'ein Mishalman Es HaKofer. They do not pay the kofer payment that they were trying to impose on the defendant, Kosavri. The Rabbonin of this source is of the opinion, Kufra Kapora. The payment of Kofer, the Kofer payment, the financial restitution to the family of the victim is called Kapora. Kufra equals Kapora. It's a form of atonement. Vahani, the witnesses, Lav B'nei Kapora Ninhu. They are not subject to needing atonement. What does that mean? So let us take a look at the Rashi, the second to last narrow line, Kufra Kapora, Lechaper al zeh shehorag shoras odom, an atonement for the owner of an animal that killed someone. Vahani lav b'nei kapora ninhu. The witnesses, the false witnesses, are not subject to this atonement, shelo horag shoram odom. Their ox didn't kill anybody. They might be Rishoyim, they might be evil in that they were trying to force an innocent person to pay money. But we can't impose upon them a payment that has nothing to do with the nature of their sin. The payment is an atonement for a very specific sin or specific event. It's an atonement for the owner of an animal that killed. They are not owners of an animal that killed. Hence, we do not impose upon them the kapora, the kufra payment, the kofer payment. As you can see, we have a bracketed section. The note on the inside margin says, Achrei HaSugrayim, after the bracketed section, HaGemora Choyzeres L'Rishima Shel Arba Dvarim. The Gemara will return to discuss the list of 4 points that concern Edim Zomimim. B'Soch HaSugrayim, within the bracketed section, Kayom Diyun B'Kufra Kapora. There is a discussion concerning the issue of Kufra Kapora, the labeling of this payment as Kapora, as atonement. So, that having been said, if you just visually glance at the Gemara immediately after the brackets, you'll see number 4, and in quotation marks you'll see the expression V'ein Nimkorn Be'Eved Ivri, that comes from the source that we saw above. Once you know that, it makes it much easier now to learn the bracketed section, realizing that we'll get back to the original discussion later. Turning to the brackets, Man Tano Kufra Kapora. Before we go further in the reading, though, let us take advantage of another introductory note in the outside margin of a tatnose, means a subtopic, and mivne, and structural note. We are now going to encounter some diamonds. Machloikes I amrinon de koifer havi kapora hi aliba de Rabbi Shmuel levad o havi aliba de kuleyama. We're going to see a machloikes amoroyim concerning the payment of kofer. Is it labeled as kapora as atonement, according to Rabbi Shmuel alone, or according to everybody? How are we to, according to whom, is the kofar payment called kapara, called atonement? Of course, if you call it kapara, that will be grounds for exempting the Edim Zomimim to pay it, because they're not B'nai Kapara. If you label it, let's say, a financial payment, as opposed to an atonement payment, you call it Mamon, then it's a simple financial payment, just like they were trying to impose a financial restitution on the defendant. They, in turn, shall make this restitution. They shall pay the defendant that which they were trying to cause him to lose. However, as we said before, if it's an atonement payment, then they're not subject to that payment. So the Gemara is asking, which Tana holds, man Tana kufro equals kapara? Which is the Tana that labels the kofar payment as an atonement? Omar of Chisda, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osho, Rabbi Yochanan Broka hi, Desanya. We have a Tanaic source that's found in Maseches Bava Kama. The source begins by citing a pasuk, V'nosan pidyon nafsho. The owner of the murderous animal shall, it says here, he shall pay the redemption of his soul. Which soul? Demei nizik, the value of the deceased, of the killed individual. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osho, Rabbi Yochanan Broka Omer, Demei mazik, the payment is according to the value of the owner of the animal, not the value of the deceased. My love, the hawk omifligi. Notice we have an aleph here. This represents stage one of the analysis of the machlokas tanoim. So what must be the point of controversy? The more sovar kufro kapora. The Chachomim will hold. Now the Chachomim held that the payment is according to the value of the nizak, of the killed individual. Demor Sovar Kufra Mamona. According to the first opinion, the Tanakama, we'll call the Chachomim, they hold that the kofar payment is a straight out financial restitution. The person that was killed had a certain market value. That value is what has to be paid by the owner of the ox. Therefore, the kofar payment, according to the Chachomim, is a straight-out financial restitution. Omar Savar, Rabbi Shmuel, who held that the payment is based on the value of the owner of the ox, he holds kufra kapara, that the kofar payment is an atonement. And we can say that he has to atone for himself, that he had an animal that he allowed to kill somebody, so let him pay his own value, let him redeem himself, so to speak. As Rashi says, Kufra Kapora Lechaper Al Atzmo Shechayev Miso Bidei Shemayim, the owner of this animal is really guilty in heaven to be himself killed. Lefikoch Yitein Demei Atzmo, let him pay his own value as a means of exonerating himself. Continuing in the Gemara, stage B, second stage, Omar Rav Papa, no. Rav Papa says, I'm not going to set up the machlokes tanoim surrounding the topic of is it mamon or kapora. The kule alma kufra kapora. According to Rav Papa, all the tanoim, even the Tanakama, even the Chachamim will hold that the nature of the payment is one of kapor of atonement. So what's the underlying point of machlokis then? Notice with our markings, what we've done is we've slashed, underlined the expression so that it's easier to see, to focus on each one's explanation, Rav Chisda and Rav Papa's respective explanations of what the point of machlokis between the Chachomim and Rabbi Shmuel ben Osho, Rabbi Yochanan Broka is. So according to Rav Popo, it's as follows. Mor sofar b'denizak shayminon, the Chachomim hold that the kapora payment is evaluated in terms of the value of the deceased. Umor sofar, Rabbi Shmuel holds b'demazik shayminon, it's evaluated in terms of the kapora payment, the atonement payment is evaluated in terms of the value of the perpetrator. Mai tamayu derabonan. What is the source for the shitas of rabbonan that hold it's bedinizak, that you go according to the value of the victim? The answer is based on word comparison in the Torah. Ne'mar hashoso lemato v'ne'mar hashoso lemalo. Notice we've included for your convenience the psukim that are necessary for understanding this Gemara. Notice where the star in the margin is. You have a pasuk says im kofer yushas olov. That's the tashlum of kofer. That's our topic of the murderous ox. There's another pasuk that deals with a situation where a woman is caused to miscarriage. Kasher yoshis olov baal ho'isha. That's a reference to demei vlodos, the value of the offspring that were miscarried. There's a payment made in that pasuk as well. So the Gemara says that the term yoshis or hashosa is a reference to the word yoshis, appears in two places. Continuing in the reading, ma lahalon bidinizik, just like in the case of demei vlodos, in the case of the miscarriage, the payment is made for the value of the nizak, of the damaged one, namely the value of the miscarried children. Afkan, so too in the case of the murderous ox, bidinizak, the value is in terms of the victim. For Rabbi Shmuel, who holds that the evaluation is through made in terms of the value of the perpetrator, the owner of the animal, v'nosan pidyoy nafsho iksiv. The pasuk says, and he shall repay the redemption of his soul, which sounds, according to Rabbi Shmuel, as the payment of himself. He has to redeem himself. So that's the meimazik. V'rabbonan, what do the rabbonan respond? In. They say, yes, there is an element of redemption. Pidyo nafsho tziv. It says he has to redeem himself. The perpetrator has to redeem himself. Miu. However, ki shayminon, when the evaluation is made as to how much he has to pay, bidinizak shayminon. The evaluation is made in terms of the value of the victim. And that, as we saw before, according to the Rabbanon, was established through the word comparison between the two topics. With that, you see the bracketed section closes, and we go back to the original list. We said about Edim Zomimim, V'ein Nimkoren V'Eved Ivri. Imagine a case where a person steals money, he's a thief, and does not have the means of paying back that which he sold. So the Torah imposes a halacha of the he who cannot afford to pay back, he is sold into a form of bondage known as Eved Ivri. Before we continue in the rest of the Gemara, we would like to take note of the geometric forms that we see coming up. We have a crown form. The note on the side, Nosei Mivneh, features this shape. It's another geometric form, and it represents a series marking or an attempt to connect names and ideas. We're also going to see a flipping over of this form in the course of the Gemara. As you look on, you'll see Rava in the same shape but flipped over. So our explanation on the side says shlovim, stages. B'nisayon shirafamlino lahagbil ha'dekatoni dein enum zomim nekarim be'evit ivri. These are stages in Rav Hamnuna's attempt to restrict the teaching that stated the Edim Zomimim, that Edim Zomimim are not sold into Eved Ivri bondage. He wants to restrict that. Namely, it is not so that they are never sold into this form of bondage. There are times that they are sold, according to Rav Hamnuna. As we continue in our note on the side, you notice the inverted form, Dechiyoso Shorovo Ledivrei Rav Hamnuna. Rava's dismissal of that which Rav Hamnuna teaches. So let's now continue in the Gemara. After having learned in the source that Eved Ivri, that Edim Zomimim are not sold into this form of bondage called Eved Ivri, Sova Rav Hamnuna Lemeimar, Hani Mili, when is it that they are not sold as Eved Ivri? Hecha de Is Le Lididei. That is when the defendant has money. So you have two witnesses that testified that so-and-so committed a theft, and that so-and-so, this defendant, happens to be a person that has money. Demigu de'ihu lo mizdaben, since the defendant himself would not have been sold because he had money to pay back for the theft, inhu nami lo mizdabnu, the witnesses also are not to be sold when they are exposed as liars. Avol hecho de les le lididei, but in a case that the defendant has no means, he's a poor man, they were trying to condemn him, they testified about him as having committed a theft, and he is a man, this defendant does not have the means of paying back. Afalgav de is lehu lididu, even if the witnesses themselves are people of means, mizdavnu, they are to be sold into Eved Ivri bondage. That's what Rav Hamnuna claims. The Gemara asks, "Valemru lei, why is it that the witnesses who have money cannot say to the defendant, Iant have loch, if you would have had money, mi have mizdavnes, would you have been sold? Ananani, we too, who happen to, yes, have money, lo mizdavninon, we don't intend to be sold into bondage. Elo, sova Rav Hamnuna lemeimar, hani mili, when is it that the source teaches that Edim Zomimim are not sold into Eved Ivri status? Hani mili, hecho de isle olididei oliditu, that is where on one side of the equation, they have money, whether it be the defendant or the witnesses themselves. However, in a case that the defendant has no money and the witnesses themselves have no money, mizdavni, they are to be sold as Eved Ivri. That could be understood very simply. They were intending to see to it that the defendant be sold. He has no means of paying back. They themselves also have no means of paying back. Therefore, they are to be sold as Eved Ivri instead. Amar Lei Rava, Rava says to Rav Hamnuna, hey, but there's a pasuk you have to take into consideration. The pasuk says, V'nimkar v'gineva soy Amar Rachmana. The Torah says that he shall be sold as a result of his theft. V'gineva soy v'lo bizmamoy. The penalty of being sold as Eved Ivri is for theft, and not for lying. For lying, there's a different penalty, but it's not sale. It's not being sold as Eved Ivri. So Rava, by virtue of a diuk from the pasuk, he says that Rav Hamnuna's observation is not acceptable, and rather you go with the source as it is, that they are never sold as Eved Ivri. Mishum Rabbi Akiva Amru, v'chule, this is a reference to point 5, he said that they do not pay al pi atzmon, which would mean that if Edim Zomimim were found to be Zomimim in a particular Beis Din, and so we see that they're liars, and the defendant who expects now to, let us say, receive payment from them because they try to condemn him, the defendant, into paying. Let us just say that the defendant, the original defendant, didn't have a chance yet to lay claim upon them, upon the liars, in court. They ran away, let us say, until before he had a chance to lay claim on them. They then showed up in a different court, and they said, they told the court a story, and they told a true story. The court said, they told the court, hey, you know, we were found to be Zomimim in that other place, and we are confessing to that. According to Rabbi Kiva, with that confession, they thereby exempt themselves from having to pay. My time to Rabbi Kiva, the Gemara goes on. What is the reasoning behind Rabbi Kiva? Kosovar, Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion, Knosahu, who Knos ein Meshalim al Piatzmo, that the punishment given to Edim Zomimim is categorized as a Knas punishment. And a Knas, sometimes translated as a fine, but for our purposes it's easier simply to relegate this to a specific realm called, or category, and call it Knas. Knas payments are not paid based on one's own confession. The Rashi cites the source for this. It's in the case of the kafel payment, where a person is found to be a thief and he has to pay a double payment, in other words, twice the value of that which he stole. The pasuk there says, "Asher yarshiun Elohim." The payment is made by those who are condemned by the judges. Prat l'marshias atzmo, to the exclusion of someone who condemns himself, namely someone who confesses himself. So when it comes to knas payments, just like kafel is an example of a knas payment, he is exempt if he admits. So too all knas payments are treated the same way. As we look ahead in the Gemara, we notice some new geometric forms, the house form. We have on the side of our Gemara a note, Nosei Mivneh, notice a house with the double underline, which is also one of our series markings. Memros, statements, Lehochiach de'edim zomimim equals knas. Statements to show that edim zomim are treated as knas. Omar Rova, we continue in the Gemara, Omar Rabo, Teda, let it be known that the payment of Edim Zomimim, the punishment given to Edim Zomimim, and specifically a punishment that's imposed upon them to pay money, because they were trying to condemn the victim into paying, that payment that they have to make is called Knas. Shehare, lo asu maisa, they didn't do anything, they didn't do any action, v'neherogin u'mishamin, and yet we find that in the case that they testified about a murder and they're found to be Zomimim, or in the case they testified about a payment that needed to be made which never really took place, they pay. So that even though they didn't do the murder, they're killed. Even though they didn't steal the money, they have to pay. So the fact that they are given something, they are punished in something or for that which they did not actually do, that is, and yet they are punished, that shows us that it's a knas payment. Omar Rav Nachman, Teda, Sharei Momon Biad Bailim U'Mishalmin. Let it be known that it's a knas payment, because when they testified, let us say, about a defendant having committed a theft, and now that they're exposed to be phonies, the theft never took place, and the money that he supposedly theft remains in the hands of the original owner. In other words, the money never left the hands of the original owner. And yet, umishalman, and yet they have to pay. In other words, what's the situation? They testified about a guy who committed a theft who never committed a theft. In other words, money was never taken from the original owner, and yet these guys have to pay money. That shows us that it's not a mumon payment, it's not a financial restitution situation, but rather it's a knas payment, a fine. The Gemara, in looking at Rav Nachman's hesber, his explanation, who just said the mamon is biyad bailim mishalim, my nihu, this idea that the money is still in the hands of the owner, what do you mean by that? Delo asu maisa, it means that no action really took place. Rashi explains further. Let us look at the top. My nihu, hai momon biad bailim dekomer Rav Nachman. What does Rav Nachman mean? What does he intend to say when he says that the momon is biad bailim? Hainu delo nase maise, shadayin loy shilem. The defendant never paid. Elo shenigmar dino lishalem. The defendant never paid the money. Simply there was a resolution or a verdict that was issued that he should pay the money. Well, hainu derabba. Then Rav Nachman is really saying nothing new. He's saying that which Rabba said. What did Rabba say? It's a knas payment because lo osu maisa. The Edom didn't do a maisa, and yet they have to pay. Well, that which Rav Nachman is saying right now, in effect, is the same thing as that which Rabba said. Therefore, the Gemara says, Emo v'chein omar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman isn't really offering a new explanation. He's simply saying over that which Rabba said using different words. So it's more accurate to say, and similarly says Rav Nachman, like Rabba. With that, we complete our shiur for today.